The following meditation and talk were given at Sandpoint Sangha. Please visit our website at sandpointsangha.com.
As you breathe in, sense and feel your breath in the belly. How the belly balloons out as you inhale, and as you exhale, how the stomach muscles move back towards your spine. Just connecting with the breath. Felt sense. And we can recognize how the breath works as you inhale, the thoracic diaphragm moves down, the lower belly balloons out with your breath. And as you exhale, the diaphragm moves back up and pushes the air out of the lungs. And the respiratory system, as you inhale, the blood moves from the extremities of the body, from the feet, the hands, the skull, from the extremities, it moves all the way into the lung, where it drops off waste products. And then as you exhale, fresh oxygenated blood flows throughout the whole body, all the way out to the extremities. And this is just going on. And we can just be aware of it or not. But it's always there. Just like the light. But we can turn our attention to it and just feel the heart is right next to the lungs. So if you drop your attention from your head down to your heart, you can let your heart's deepest wish, maybe just for love or light, for connection, to follow that movement of the breath, of the blood as you inhale. The blood moves all the way from the extremities into the heart. And as you exhale, with your heart's deepest wish, flows all the way out with the blood into all the extremities of the body. Just this. Make your breath smooth and short, short little wisp of breath. Like inhaling, one, two, three, exhaling, one, two, three. One inhalation to the count of three, and an exhalation to the count of three. Continuing on. And the next time you exhale, make the exhalation just a little bit longer than the inhalation. Which takes us into a relaxation response, into the parasympathetic nervous system. And then just relaxing into just being here. The easy feeling of being. And as you relax, maybe you open to something very subtle, deeply within. Essential nature, Buddha nature. Light. Love. Spacious. Sensation of openness. And perhaps delight. Maybe awareness of the thing that's so subtle is maybe even just simply the beat of the heart. An opening. Gratitude. And then maybe deepening your breath and coming out of meditation, but still sitting within meditation, still sitting as if you have joy sitting beside you. So open your eyes. Do you all want to stretch? So, you know, a joy is, of course, it's one of the Brahma Viharas. Brahma Vihara of love and joy and compassion and equanimity. Brahma Viharas, the central nature. And the looking within, the knowing it, the finding it, the bringing it more and more into the forefront of our awareness. And it's not to deny today's world of suffering or the grief or the illnesses or the trauma, both inner traumas and outer traumas. There's really, I mean, we all have the recognition that the world is hurting. And that's why joy is so important. The Dalai Lama says, the best medicine is inner peace and contentment. So the cultivation of of a practice of joy is like an intervention. It's an intervention to stress. It's an intervention to trauma. It's like an inoculation to trauma, the capacity to be more resilient. And that's what our meditation practice is about. Resiliency. There was a test that was done at the University of Wisconsin on longtime meditators and Buddhist monks, and then people that did not meditate. And on this test, what they did is they applied a little bit of hot heat burning to the wrist. And then they observed through an MRI how that pain affected their brain. And how with the meditators, how quickly it subsided and it returned to stability as compared to the non-meditating group who stayed with the pain longer. So, you know, there's how our practice works. It's not like we're excluded from suffering or from pain or discomfort, but we're able to be with it in more skillful ways that it doesn't linger around so much. And you know, there's been a lot of studies on the brain, the neural science of the brain, by Rick Hansen and different people, and the recognition that there is a part of our brain, it's called the default network. And this part of the brain is the brain that actually, we're always defaulting to it. It's the part of your brain that does the blah, 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 tells the same story over and over again. And this part of the brain actually has a negativity bias. And the negativity bias was a survival mechanism back in the days of dinosaurs people needed to be prepared to fight or flight. And so they had this negativity bias, but that's not really necessary anymore, you know, and it would be really nice if we could transform that and evolve to find more unity and more harmony through practices. Through interventions of meditation, of body sensing, of breath work, of cultivating Brahma Viharas, joy, love, equanimity. These are all practices that are incredible. And there's really a lot of health benefits also through joy. People that live with joy, they live longer. You're strengthening your immune system. You have more friends. People want to be around you more. There's a resiliency. There's a happier life. But it's back to that experience of joy. It's just so subtle, right? Because it's not a big feeling. It's the feeling that you experience when you go out in nature, and you just stop and you just pause, and the mind stops and you're quiet. The looking within, it's finding it, knowing it, nourishing it. Until it installs itself at the inner resource we can count on. The opposite of joy is actually hollowness. Hollowness is the opposite of joy, because joy is fullness. Joy is a fullness, nothing else is needed. It's there, and when we feel hollow, we're always searching outside of ourselves. So you could say, in a joy practice, just like I think quite a few of you have a gratitude practice. And, you know, gratitude is one of the most beautiful practices you can have on a daily basis, because if you have a gratitude practice, it causes you to always stop and look for something that I'm grateful for. So it inclines the mind to look for something to be grateful for. And a practice of joy would incline the mind. Oh, where can I experience some joy? Where can I stop? Where can I give myself some time? It's not a big thing we're doing. It's just so small. And then there's that sympathetic joy, the joy that we experience of others that we're joyful for. That touches the heart. So you could think of joy as a, not a thought, not a perception, but a felt sense. What does joy feel like? You might just, as you go out into your day and sit outdoors, what is the felt sense of joy? Maybe it's a feeling of warmth. Sun on your body. Maybe it just feels like a little opening. A little energetic expansiveness, spaciousness. A deeper breath. A relaxing into simply just being. Into the recognition of the presence. To seeing without thinking. To listening. Listening to the sounds of the wind in the trees or the song of the birds without labeling it. Just letting the wind, the breeze move through the heart and opening to that presence. And there's our practice of awareing presence, becoming more awake, more aware. And what we notice is there's a relaxation. It's like a tension just falls out of our body. We don't have to prop ourselves up. We were so fortunate that we have these practices that are interventions against the stress and trauma in today's world. You can look around and see all the people that don't have the practices. And sometimes, you know, sometimes no matter what, it doesn't feel like the practice is working. We get stuck, we get lost. We forget. But eventually we remember, we come back. One of the practices that I find very beneficial is the practice of the breath. You know, the breath is always there. It's always there. But mostly we're not aware of it, but it's still there. Just like the joy, it's always there, never not there. And yet when we become conscious of the breath, it brings us into the present moment. So for me, I'm just speaking from my own practice. I know how I can spin out into things that are going on in the world. And I'll do body sensing the hands, you know, like sensing a part of your body, like bring your hands up and place your attention in the palms of your hand and just sense and sense and feel your hand. And as you just sense and just feel your hand, what you notice is you're not thinking, you're feeling. And you could take those hands and you could take them out wider. And as you take your hands out wider, you feel your hands still. But you can also feel spacious. And open. Then you can bring your hands back in and place them in front of the heart. And you can breathe into the place of the heart. And you can use different breaths, like just the breath called coherent breath, is to become conscious of the breath. And the recognition that they've learned a lot over the study of the breath, Western science meeting with Eastern science, and how the breath is so important to our health. I mean, it's the practice of the breath is called pranayama. Prana is the life force, right? It's life moving through us, the breath, it moves through us. We breathe in, we breathe out. Life moves through us. It flows through us. And yet, ama is toxicity. It's places where we become contracted. It can be like a thought, a mind state. It can be an emotional state. It can be a health state. But it's someplace where we contract. And as we contract there, the prana can't move through, it's locked there. And so take in your breath and being aware of the breath and how it flows in and how it flows out and how it flows in and flows out and being conscious of it. And as you breathe in, to direct the breath into those tight spots is an amazing practice. But simply the practice of just being coherent at the breath, being conscious of it, and the recognition that breathing in, it's not so much the idea of taking a deep breath in, one big breath. It's more skillful to take a breath like 1, 2, 3 inhalation. Exhale, 1, 2, 3. Inhale, 1, 2, 3. Exhale, 1, 2, 3. Continue on inhaling and exhaling. And you find if the body accepts that breath, the breath gets longer. You can inhale for a count of 4. Inhale, 1, 2, 3, 4. Exhale, 1, 2, 3, 4. You could do that 4 times. Inhaling and exhale. And really connecting with the breath, getting close, intimate. And then if you find that the body's accepted that intervention, you can make the breath longer. You can breathe into 5, exhale 5. And in this way, we're creating more energy, more life force, more capacity to meet life, to be more awake, more alive, more conscious. But at the end of one of those exhalations, you could just pause your breath. You could just sustain at the end of the exhalation, just pause the breath until the body feels like it needs more breath and feels starved for the breath, then breathe in. And as you exhale, breathe out. And you eventually can increase the amount of the pause. And what happens when you pause the breath is it starves the body of the oxygen and the carbon dioxide. So then when you do breathe in, the body uses that much more efficiently. And that pause, the measure of it, how long you can pause the breath, is a measurement of health. And on your next breath, as you inhale, say for a count of 4, exhale out for twice that amount. If you inhale for a count of 4, breathe out for a count of 8. This is the relaxation response. It switches you over from the sympathetic nervous system to the parasympathetic, the relaxation. And you can do that for 4 breaths. And then you can just pause. into just being present, just a witnessing presence. So, I'm offering you a breathing practice in case you ever wake up in the middle of the night and you can't go back to sleep. And the mind's going and it's moving, and you get lost in the thoughts, the emotions, whatever's going on, and you can't sleep. Try that coherent breath, breathing in, say for a count of three, and breathing out for a count of three. But start with your extremities. Start with your foot, and breathe into your foot for a coherent breath several times until you start to feel your foot, actually sensation in your foot somewhat. And then move up to your knee. And then move up to your hands and your shoulders, and you start to move through the body in this way. I remember Almas Hamid offered this practice several years ago. You're just taking your attention and you're just gradually relaxing the different aspects of your body little by little. So you become so relaxed that pretty soon you find that you've fallen asleep. And if that doesn't work, then I look at, what is it that's keeping me awake? What is it that I need to turn my attention to? What is the thought? What is the emotion? What is it wanting me? Why does it want my attention? What does it want me to do? What action do I need to take? But, you know, sometimes that just feels too overwhelming for me, too. So then I just go. Am I aware? Yes, I'm aware. And just that recognition that I'm aware of what's going on creates enough space that I can relax. Because I'm not it. I'm not the thought. I'm not the thing that's going on. I'm able to separate from it and see it more clearly and to relax. It's like an awaring presence arises, and maybe the solution to the problem isn't there at that time, but it does appear. We have within us the perfect response to whatever is arising. We don't need to figure it out. Just relax and open. The wound is the place where the light enters you. We're all broken. That's how the light gets in. So, perhaps you might share something with this Sangha, with this community of heart. Some practice that you've found that works for you. Maybe it's singing or dancing.
Well, Linda, the one you just talked about where you exhale twice as long as the inhale. Uh-huh. Now, I believe you might have taught me that in the first place. I find it amazing because on that exhale, like right from the very first one, I always feel my shoulders dropping a couple inches, and it's amazing that how quickly, you know, it works. And another one, I don't know if called, I heard it called box breath and square breath and stuff, but it's a lot, probably taught me that one too, where you inhale maybe four, hold four, exhale four, hold four. And I heard that Navy SEALs do that when they're in a very stressful situation. So anyway, I like that one a lot as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
Of course, dancing wildly. Always good.
It's so amazing to me how powerful the breath is and how it's taken me so long to know that. You know, because I've been teaching yoga for so many years and pranayama, but like, I think it was just always too subtle for me. Jim would always say, fall in love with the breath, fall in love with the breath. Jim, you could come over here and sit. You don't even have to talk. You could just see these happy faces.
I don't remember where I heard it, but it might have been you, Linda, or I have it hooked to Frank somehow or other. But when I wake up in the morning, it's doing a body check and, you know, how's my body feeling and stretching and moving around, but not getting up, and then just sort of counting my blessings. That, you know, what I am so thankful for. And, you know, it's just a time when I don't have to be on the ready and on the alert and jump out of bed like the old days when you had to get to work and you were always late. And so I find that it took me instead of me taking it, you know, over a period of time, I realized, oh my goodness, this is happening. My body is telling me to do this and my mind is telling me to do this. And so I surrendered to it and I love it. But my dog sometimes is not happy. He's always like pawing at me. Is it time yet? Can we get up yet? Can we get up yet? And I find that, you know, I can just snuggle him up and then I have another 5 minutes or so of counting my blessings.
That is a great way to wake up. Yeah, very good. I'm going to take off my AirPods so Jim can hear.
Hi, Jim.
I have a gratitude practice. It's at, usually at night, and it's usually with meditation, not always. And I don't want to go into it necessarily. It's just that I look at the people that love me and I love them in life. And then the other thing is that that helps me is to hold people in the light that are struggling mentally, physically, emotionally, spiritually, that I know that are struggling, that have made it aware to me. And yeah, that's very helpful for me. It's very It takes me out of my self-pity.
So, Linda.
Yes.
I find a little time on my mat with my breath and doing some yoga, probably 3 times a week in the morning, but it just really grounds me. And maybe 4 times a week. And every time I think of you, there, your voice is in my head as I'm doing the yoga. but it is, it really, it's a stretching at this point in my life, probably. But it just really grounds me. And I feel at home, the movement and the breath and just being silent, really, with myself.
Yeah.
So yeah. Know that you live on in my life.
Well, certainly taking that time for ourselves, isn't it just so important, huh, to stop and do whatever practices that we've come to find work for us.
And we have the time now. Or some of us do. Not everybody, but yes, some of us. So wonderful seeing you.
Wonderful seeing you. One of the things I love about the breath practice is it doesn't take any extra time, because you can do it when you're riding in the car. You know, you can do it for 20 minutes, just work on going up longer and longer with the inhalation, exhalation, and it keeps you alert. It's not like you're not alert or anything. You're still driving very alert. So that's what I love about the breath, is you can use it. You just have to remember to do it, right?
Yeah, Linda.
Uh-huh.
What I noticed with the breath work is that when you're doing it, it definitely brings you into the present time. And when I get to the end and I wait, that's when I get the best information. I get the best ideas. You know, I'm not looking for them. And it's amazing, because my mind, and I've watched that, I'm not running this show, but my mind is so quiet that it's like something gets bigger, you know, and the goodness or the love is just like what Rod was saying. Pretty soon you realize, oh, I could be doing this for so-and-so or so-and-so. And then it just gets bigger and bigger and bigger, and you feel better and better and better. So yeah, it's pretty interesting.
Yeah, we have some great practices, don't we?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Carol. Well,
a couple of weeks ago, Barbara Fairlight led the Wisdom Circle, and she brought in 2 inquiry questions. And I'm not going to say them quite the same way, but one was, what can you do to bring more compassion into your life? And what can you do to be more at ease in your life? And, you know, I have lots of tools and I use them all, and I'm always open to new ones. And that one was really helpful. That's kind of that 3 a.m. You know, I love being on my yoga mat, but I don't love getting out of bed in 3 a.m. to get on my yoga mat. Although there are times when I have done it and it helps, but to go, oh, you're not at ease right now. What can you do right now to bring yourself at ease or more at ease? And there's always an answer. Maybe one of it is looking at the problem, looking what's causing you this suffering right now, looking at it and stating what it is, and just doing that can make it seem like, that's not such a big deal, let it go. Or there's just always something that arises for how about right now in this moment, how can I, speaking to you all, be more at ease, and maybe it's looking at the screen and seeing you and staying in touch with my words. And I've also found that the answering that question of how could I be more at ease, often, well, almost always, it's the same answer as how can I find more compassion right now? So thank you, Barbara, for that wisdom circle.
Those are great questions, because what they're doing is they're just evoking our awareness, right?
Yes.
You know, you start to look at where am I not at ease? So there's an awareness. Yeah, great questions.
About 20 years ago, I had this really difficult time with sleep deprivation. And it lasted for a while, but probably right in the middle of it, within about 6 months into it, I remembered the breath, right? And it became like when I woke up, at first it was a chore. I would do the breath, but then after a couple weeks it became like a prayer. And then it became like when I would wake up, and before I would wake up and I would be like stressed, oh, I'm not sleeping. But then after I started working with the breath, it was more like, oh, it's time to do the breath, you know. It completely changed it. And to this day, yeah, to this day, if I wake up at 1 or 2 in the morning, you know, there's a pause and then I'll go, oh, it's the breath, the breath. And it is, I would say it's my prayer.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Yeah, it would be my prayer.
Yeah, falling in love with the breath, the prayer. I remember years ago, Terry teaching that if people wake up in the middle of the night and they're stressing over, oh, I'm not sleeping, I'm not getting enough sleep, then you're tired the next day. But as long as you don't stress over it and you just relax and you just breathe, you're not tired the next day. And that's always been true for me. It's like, you know, I can be awake for a couple hours and I'm not tired the next day because I'm just like, you know, breathing, relaxing, like you're saying.
Yeah. Yeah, actually beauty comes out of it. It just so surprised me.
Yeah, nice.
Natalie reminded me of a practice that I had that I have dropped here over the last few years. And that is, I was reading in Eckhart Tolle's book, is it The Power of Now, or I can't remember the title, but he said in the book to remind yourself to take 3 mindful breaths and become present. And that really did work. And I know I can do more, but I'm saying that's the minimum, mm-hmm. at least 3 mindful breaths, but it really did work for me.
Yeah.
A New Earth was the name of the book. Highly recommend it.
Is that one of his more recent books or?
No, it's probably, I don't know, at least 10, 15 years ago, I'm sure. But his first one, I think, was The Power of Now, I think. Is that correct? Yeah.
And I have a practice that I've come upon sort of recently, and it reminds me of your teaching about spaciousness. And this was, it's a practice of seeing space as not is what is between objects or people, but the space is what is holding us. It's what connects us. And that changes how we think about space entirely, that it's much easier to accept and include everything that we're conscious of when we're seeing space as something that holds us and connects us all. And when I came upon this recently, I hearkened back to your teaching about spaciousness also. I said, is that what she was talking about?
You stated that beautifully. Yeah. It's spacious, boundless, perfect, whole, complete, holds everything.
Embracing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think all of these teachings are, you know, there's a Sanskrit word called bhavanan. Bhavanan means to dig a little bit deeper, to understand something. You have to really penetrate into it to really understand something. And it's like you have to, you know, take it in, chew on it, digest it, swallow it. And I think of how that is so true, like with, you know, Frank's first teaching of welcome everything. And it's like, oh, welcome everything. That is still just, you know, such a teaching that just is something that is always something that I understand a little bit more. And I think that's true of all these teachings, you know, that we just, we're just digging a little bit deeper, 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 deeper. And opening out more and more. Space within, space without.
You know, that's another way to maybe to look at it. We all have this inside of us, and it might be just peeling the layers off.
Mm-hmm.
Just another way of looking at it.
Uh-huh.
Going to the core, just peeling off the defenses that we have, and the unknowing that we have, and past that we carry forward into our future. Just the onion, feeling the onion.
Remember, Tara Brach gave a teaching once, and it was about in the northern east, most part of India, there was, I forget where the town was, but they had the largest clay Buddha in the whole country was in this town. And this clay Buddha started having some cracks in the clay. And so the Buddhist monks went up with their flashlights and they peeked in between the cracks. And what they saw was something shiny. Remember that, Janet, that story? And what it was gold. And so when all the clay came off, there's just this massive, it's a huge gold Buddha. You could look it up on the internet and it'll take you to the story. But the monks, people asked the monks, well, why was the clay there? And they said, the clay was there to protect the monk in tumultuous times. It was a protection. But the important thing is we all have this outer layer, this protective layer, but don't forget the gold that lies inside. So light, light, light. I had a poem, but I don't know where it is. It's very special to sit and be with all of you. And to know that you're always holding the space. For all of us. So unless somebody else has something they want to share. Namaste.